We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, you're very welcome to Your Politics podcast from RTÉ News. I'm Paul Cunningham. Joining me this afternoon, Micheál Lehane, our political correspondent. How are you, Micheál?
Good.
How are you? Not so bad. And we also have a political guest with us this week. It's the co-leader of the Social Democrats, Roisin Shortall, who also happens to be their health spokesperson, which is rather advantageous in the week that we've just had. Hello, Roisin.
Hi, Paul. Not advantageous for me because there's a lot of work involved. But anyway.
Just a bit. Well, one of the little features on the podcast we try to do is to catch up with some political linguistic crimes which have been carried out by politicians. And the two we picked out this week, Micheál and myself, one was the question of direction of travel, and the other crime was an abundance of caution. Have you used either of those phrases, and indeed could you explain to us what they mean?
I have to admit I did use abundance of caution.
And what did you mean by that?
Well, I think I was quoting Dr. Corina Butler. Professor Corina Butler in relation to this, and the fact that she did take a very cautious approach, and rightly so, and that's reassuring. But the implications of that then is that it limits options in other directions, you know.
Well,
I don't think I've used direction of travel for a while.
Well, I actually used direction of travel on Wednesday. I'd written it down on Monday saying, I don't like this phrase. And I wrote it down and said, we'll use it on the podcast. And then it got stuck in my head and I ended up using it on Morning Ireland. So it just shows how infectious these things can actually be. But we'll get into the vaccination and COVID-19 stuff in a minute. But just to start off, the Social Democrats seem to be in a good place. You've got, you know, your party is larger than it has before in Dáil terms. You're doing well in the polls. Are you brimming with confidence?
Well, we're quietly kind of happy with the way things are going, I have to say. You know, when you bear in mind that we're not even 6 years old, and there's huge challenges in setting up a new party, as you'd be aware. But I think we've done reasonably well now in that kind of 5.5 years or so. We're very pleased with the progress that we're making. And the main thing is, I think, that it's steady progress. You know, 2 years ago, we trebled the number of councillors that we had, up to 19 councillors. And then last year in the election, we trebled the number of TDs from 2 to 6. So, I mean, if we can continue on that kind of path, we'd be very pleased with that. And I did set out recently at our party conference that the target now is to treble the number again in the next election and get us up to in the region of 18 to 20 TDs. And we feel that that's very doable. I think there is an appetite, all right, among the public for a new approach to politics. We base ourselves, you know, on three key principles. It's strong economy, fair society, and honest politics. And I think that last one of honest politics is what people are looking for. They're looking for competence, but they're also looking for honesty and politicians that you can trust.
Okay.
And, you know, there's been obvious problems down through the years with other parties. So we try to live up to those principles to the greatest extent possible. And I think there is an interest in that. And I think one of the most encouraging things from our point of view is the interest among young people. There's lots and lots of young people who've never been involved in politics before who are now coming to the Social Democrats. And I think that's a great sign for the future.
And what would you want to do with that power? Let's say you did have a very good general election. Are you focused on going into government to achieve policy, or are you more of a stand back type person saying, I'll wait to see and decide matters then?
I think we are very keen to participate in government to implement social democratic policies because, I mean, that's the aim, that's the purpose of the party. But we've said all along that we're absolutely not interested in participating in government for the sake of being in government alone to make up the numbers. And we're not interested in this thing of power for power's sake. We're only interested in participation in government if we can make a difference and if we can implement our policies. And I mean, we did take some criticism for not participating in government when it was formed last year. But we did have extensive talks with both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And the sticking point really for us in relation to both of those parties was the whole question of housing. housing, which was such a big issue in the last election, but continues to be a major issue impacting so many people's lives. And like, the unfortunate thing was that we were very keen to engage in that, look at a new way of housing, of providing housing, and principally taking steps to drive down the cost of housing. And I suppose that's why we walked away, because there was no budge on that from Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. And as we've seen, they've continued those same regressive housing policies since the election.
But does that mean then that you would be aligning yourselves with Sinn Féin if Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are two parties you don't think you're going to be able to do business with?
Well, we're not aligning ourselves with any other party. We're, set out our own stall, and we will be seeking to achieve the maximum number of seats so that we can participate in government. And we'll see what happens then after the next election. So it didn't work out, obviously, and it wasn't on to participate with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael after the last election. I think there'll be a lot of lessons learned by those parties that they didn't shift, I think, particularly in relation to the direction that Fianna Fáil has taken and the resulting kind of slump in the polls for them. I think the situation was very much misjudged in the post-election period by Micheál Martin. I think he didn't show the kind of vision or courage that was required. And I think we could have had a very different government. And I think it could have also have been very different for Fianna Fáil if they had moved in that direction. They had been talking the talk of social democracy for some time before the election. They, you know, did many of their policies, they were imitating what we were doing, and many of their policies were along those lines in relation to health and in relation to some of the things they talked about in housing. But when it came to the crunch then after the election, they weren't prepared to actually take the steps to give effect to that kind of social democratic policy. And I think they're paying a price for that now.
And do you think, like, Taoiseach Micheál Martin, he's there, but it would appear that Fianna Fáil is going to have a change of leadership in the coming years. Would there be a personality within the Fianna Fáil party you would think would be more to the left, more advocating the policies which you support?
Well, I wouldn't be that interested in the whole issue of personality. It is a matter of policies as far as we're concerned. And you know, I don't mind really what the person is like, personality-wise. It's a matter of what their beliefs and their value system are. And I think there's a lot of dissatisfaction within Fianna Fáil at the moment, a lot of discontent, and how could it be otherwise with their very low poll ratings? And they don't seem to be going anywhere at the moment. But, I mean, whether there's anybody there to actually lift them out of that and take them in a new direction, you know, with that kind of vision and a different value system, which is not just about more of the same and, being a paler version of Fine Gael, essentially. Somebody who can see the vision and see the potential for promoting social democratic values, because I think at heart a lot of people are social democrats. They want a fairer society. They want a society that works well, that has decent public services, and that doesn't leave people behind, but that provides opportunity for people as well. And, that's absolutely possible. And I think the kind of country that we are, small country, it's quite an intimate country insofar as we all know each other very well. And I think there is that sense of solidarity among people. But there hasn't been that leadership from any major party for quite some time.
OK, well, we'll see what happens when that moment comes. But just one other question before we talk about COVID and the vaccines is just the question of how the parties of the left, centre-left, align themselves. In our last podcast, we had Eoin Arirdhon, their education correspondent, their education spokesperson, and he was talking about that there was merit in the possibility of a merger between Labour and the Social Democrats that didn't care what the party was called. It was a values-based thing, that they were harder and stronger together than they were disparate groups. Where do you stand on all of that?
Well, I smile when I hear yet another Labour Party spokesperson talking about a merger. That's the only thing they seem to talk about when they're doing interviews. Look, from our point of view, that just is not a runner. It's not on.
Why,
we are a new party. I think
I'm just wondering. Sorry to interrupt
future.
You. I'm just wondering, just because maybe people who pay less attention to politics and wouldn't actually know very maybe the names of the spokespeople in the parties, they would see both Labour and Social Democrats as being broadly aligned.
Well, we're both centre-left parties, all right, and many of our policies would be quite similar on paper anyway. I suppose there's still a very strong sense among the public that, you know, Labour forgot about those policies during their period in government and were more closely aligned to Fine Gael-type policies. But, you know, whatever about the policies, I think there are a lot of differences between ourselves and the Labour Party. There's a very different culture in the two parties. We're not a hierarchical party the way Labour is. We're very much open to women, and I think there's evidence of that from the fact that four of our six TDs are women. I mean, that's quite an extraordinary achievement, I think, and it's something we're very proud of. We're very open to new young people getting involved in politics, and I think we're seen as a party of the future rather than a party of the past. So we're concentrating on developing the party and growing the party. And I mean, there's sometimes talk about, you know, the sum of the two being greater and so on. That certainly didn't work out in the past. And Labour's own experience of that in relation to Democratic Left was not a good one by any means. But, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for choice and choice on the left. And there are differences between the parties on the left. And the more choice that there is, in many ways, the better. And we do also have the capacity to cooperate on different things. And we've seen that in this Dáil and in the last Dáil, where there can be a level of cooperation with parties in opposition and parties of the left generally. And that's a good thing. But we are a distinct, separate party. And that's the way we intend to continue.
Roisin, just why do you think the Labour and Democratic Left merger didn't work out? You spoke about saying that that didn't work out for Labour. What's your view on that?
Well, Micheál, I'm not keen on dwelling too much on the past, but you know, there was that thing where it was regarded as more of a reverse takeover, and it was never clear just why that merger took place. And we did end up, the merged party ended up weaker than the two separate parties. And again, very often, if there is choice, I mean, in my own case and my experience in Dublin North West, I coexisted with Pruntius de Rossa for many years. We were different. We had obviously areas that were in common, but we were also different in the emphasis on different elements of policy and so on. And we were both elected in Dublin North West. And that, in turn, contributed to a greater representation of the left. Whereas, you know, when the merger took place, well, Pruntius de Rossa moved on at that stage. But you can have a higher level of representation for the left by having greater choice. And it didn't work out, obviously, terribly well for the Labour Party in relation to that merger. And anyway, look, that's okay. Their business. From our point of view, we're an independent party and we intend a separate party with our own distinct culture and policies. And we intend developing the party like that for the future.
Okay, let's move on to the question of COVID-19 and vaccine response. Micheál, just what was your sense of the past couple of days? Roller coaster is one of the words that's been used to describe it.
Yeah, I suppose what you had was kind of that tentative caution through Tuesday, that address by Ronan Glenn and others to the Oireachtas Committee, beginning to talk a little bit more freely about the possibilities for summer and opening up the economy, and the notion too that you could see a plan that would talk about May and June and possibly even beyond that beginning to take shape. And before that committee meeting ended, then there was that news about Johnson & Johnson and issues around that vaccine coming off the back of what had already been decided about AstraZeneca. And suddenly there is that sense of crisis beginning to emerge, and work that government are going to have to do to try and rework that vaccine plan once again. And that makes its way into Wednesday morning, really, until the thing shifts again and the mood changes substantially with news that there is more Pfizer vaccines on the way, confirmed by the European Commission president. And again, then suddenly today, and of course, the numbers around COVID cases and around the reproduction number and all that, and hospital numbers, all those things as well, suggesting that once again, there are now possibilities for the summer and an opening up of the economy. But I think the volatility of this week in the political system about all this shows that while things are quite hopeful now, and more hopeful than they have been for a while, it's always against a backdrop of some uncertainty.
Roisin Shortall, do you have sympathy for the government? I mean, if you think of AstraZeneca, that was an issue and decision from NIAC. Then Johnson & Johnson paused their Janssen vaccine. We have the European Medicines Agency going to be taking a critical decision next week. And all the time, the government is just looking on. These events are outside of their control.
Sure, I accept that completely. And the whole thing is very finely balanced. What we have at the moment is, I suppose, you could describe it as a race between the vaccine programme and the virus. And any kind of interference with that, any setback in relation to the vaccine programme has potential implications then for, you know, everything else in terms of us getting back to some kind of normality and being able to open up our country. So it was a serious setback there with the developments in relation to AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson one. And then very quickly on the heels of that, welcome good news in relation to additional supplies of Pfizer. By my calculation, I think if for this quarter, I think we're going to end up, all told, with being about 660,000 doses short of what was expected. You know, the numbers of the additional Pfizer vaccines are similar to the Johnson & Johnson ones, but of course the Johnson & Johnson ones were single dose. So I think that is about the figure that we're short, about 660,000.
So do you believe the target can be reached then for most people?
I think
people?
It'll be a struggle. I think theoretically it can be reached. The government are talking about recalibrating, and, you know, there is potential for stretching out that interval between the first and second dose for some of the vaccines. You know, the jury is out on that just at the moment, and the government are obviously looking at that very closely to see what the scope is there. But, you know, I think we'll be there or thereabouts. That's assuming that all of the committed deliveries actually take place and there's no other setback.
Yeah.
And I mean, on the plus side, there was talk this morning there about the Russian Sputnik vaccine and potentially that being available. But, you know, it's a moving target. That's the whole thing. Yeah. And you operate on the basis of, you know, hoping for the best. And I don't think the government can do anything more than that. But I do think that they need to be very clear with us that whatever quantity of vaccines we get in over this quarter, and more importantly, the next quarter, that the country is absolutely ready for rolling out those vaccines. The numbers so far are relatively small. But when we get into the, you know, the big quantities and the big volumes, we have to be assured that there is a clear plan there. We haven't seen any plan published yet. And for example, the, you know, pharmacists still don't know where they fit in. GPs are saying they're very overwhelmed with the level of work. And of course, they need to get back to doing their regular work as well. So I'd be much more reassured if I saw an actual published plan for the rollout of the vaccine till the end of this quarter.
Okay, I mean, I know even if they do roll out the plan, no doubt it's going to be changing again. We had Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, on Morning Ireland talking about how it changed 25 times already, and no doubt will change again. But just
to clarify, Paul, I'm talking about the plan for administering the vaccine. We don't know yet who is going to do that and where exactly that's going to take place. And just last week, Paul Reid was talking about needing to recruit another 3,500 vaccinators.
Yeah.
So that's kind of sounds late in the day.
Well, one thing the government does have far more control of is the issue of mandatory hotel quarantine. And they were obliged to pause bookings this week on account of numbers being exceeded, what they call walk-ins, people basically walking off the plane, not having booked and taking up a room. Is this evidence not that the government hasn't got it right, but just basically that mandatory hotel quarantine isn't a particularly good idea in a Europe which is anchored on freedom of travel, in a country which has got a travel arrangement with the UK?
Well, I don't think anybody would have said that mandatory hotel quarantining is simple. It's not. It's a very challenging system. But if the government decides that they're going to introduce it, well, then they have to do that competently. And they haven't been very competent in the way they have handled this. It has, you know, in a period of less than 3 weeks, the situation has become quite chaotic. And even at a very basic level in relation to the number of hotel bedrooms that are required, you know, they haven't, it would seem that they haven't modelled that and they were unprepared for the kind of numbers arriving.
But they're introducing a policy which is something that you have called for over many, many months, and they're saying they've hit a bump on the road, but they're going to have more rooms ready to go from Monday and even more rooms to go again on Monday week.
Yeah, but Paul, I'm saying that basically they weren't prepared for this. They didn't put in the homework on it, as it were, to be ready for it. Now, you know, it's always difficult with a new system, but there were things that hadn't been thought through and they need to be addressed. And I hope they will be addressed. I mean, the government, I think, has learned from the experience of the last few days, and I hope they will be addressed very soon. And that issue about people coming here and not having pre-booked, like, again, the minister had assured us a number of weeks ago that that message had gone out loud and clear to airlines and had gone out generally. Clearly it hadn't, because there's a lot of people just arriving here without any arrangements being made. But, like, there's other issues then that need... And the fact that I'm questioning this, you know, it's not that I'm coming down like a ton of bricks on the government. It's that there's a new system being put in place and we have to make sure that we get it right so that it's given the best possible chance of operating. And, like, some of the issues that have arisen that need to be resolved are, for example, the whole question of exemptions on humanitarian grounds. And, like, there's lots of stories of that. So if somebody is coming in for a very genuine reason and they qualify for an exemption, well, they should, I think, be able to get that exemption before they depart from whatever country they're coming from. But the system, as it's been set up now, is that you have to come here first, you have to book into a hotel, pay your money, and then look for an exemption.
Roisin Chowdhury, co-leader of the Social Democrats, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate your time on a very busy week.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks. Micheál Lehane, RT's political correspondent. Roisin there identifying many of the difficulties when it comes to mandatory hotel quarantine. And yet at the same time, we have a policy in place and the government moving to act on it, when at the same time, the priority is get the vaccines in, get it into people's arms. And in a matter of months, maybe these hotels aren't going to be required at all.
Yeah, and I even thought, like, the criticisms that set out there and the analysis of it by Roisin Chowdhury is interesting, and the tone that is struck, saying that she's not coming down like a ton of bricks on the government, is interesting. You do feel in the political discourse right now that there is a reluctance, perhaps to travel dangerous territory, but to focus in on things that are seen at this point to be negative, because there is a view that that things are beginning to look a little bit more possible for the summer and the like. So even things like mandatory quarantine, which has obviously hit a problem, there is going to be criticism, but maybe not as intense from the opposition. What I think you do have to watch there is within government and what's going to happen. And we heard this morning Simon Coveney again talking about the need to speak to New Zealand and other countries and to learn from what mistakes might have been made when it came to mandatory quarantine there. What's really being said there is a push by the Fine Gael ministers to ease up on the guidelines and the rules when it comes to mandatory quarantine, to allow possibly, and this is under review, people are fully vaccinated, not to have to go into hotels, and perhaps to have other easing of the term as well when it comes to people maybe coming back for compassionate reasons and the like. I think that pushes on. It's on within government. How is that reconciled with the position that the health minister took in getting this over the line, and how that plays out in the next few weeks? That'll be really interesting to watch in terms of government cohesion.
Yeah, that issue of people being vaccinated but still obliged to, you know, quarantine at a huge expense is a really, really interesting one, because my gauging of the public mood is that, well, if you're vaccinated, you're vaccinated, you're not a problem, so, like, get on with it.
Yeah, and it ties into that whole question of vaccine passports and the fact that that's not in operation yet, but that is something that probably comes into view relatively soon. But does government move on this? Do the two big parties in government, are they able to move together on it? How that actually plays out will be quite interesting. And already you can see, like, criticisms building, perhaps from outside the political system. The Italian ambassador this afternoon describing the system where people coming from Italy have to go into quarantine in hotels as discriminatory. So there is that sense there. And when it comes to feeling that pressure, for some reason, it's Fine Gael that seem to be feeling it more than Fianna Fáil.
Yeah. One little story you dug out was the issue of Micheál Martin, our Taoiseach, and the possibility that he's going to get a vaccine soon.
Yeah, Micheál Martin will take his turn in the queue, like everyone else, but he is part of that group from 60 to 69, who it looks like will be getting the AstraZeneca vaccine. So at some point before the end of April, he will be registering on the online portal, and that's putting him on course to become the first member of government to receive the vaccine. That would be in a vaccination centre, it seems. It would be the AstraZeneca vaccine too, possibly and most likely at some point in May.
And why do you believe that the Taoiseach felt he was obliged to wait his turn, where, for example, by contrast in the United States, Joe Biden got his on the basis that he is the chief executive of the country and he stood there in front of the cameras and got it done by ways of encouraging people to take the vaccine? Why two completely different approaches?
Because I think politicians know, and Micheál Martin knows, that if guards and teachers weren't getting preferential treatment on any list, there's no way politicians could either, because the level of respect to which the public viewed those different professions
is graded in a certain way. I was going to say, I can't remember whether politicians are higher or lower than journalists at the moment on those sort of big indexes that we have. Just touching back into Roisin Shortall, co-leader of the Social Democrats, and we were touching base there about the question of, we were talking about her engaging with the possibility of going into government. And one of the things has to be a concern of the smaller parties is that you tend to go in with great expectations. You're confronted by the realities pretty quick. And then when the next election comes around, you get rinsed. Why is it that there's a disproportionate voter attack on the smaller party than the bigger one?
Yeah, it must be to do with the communications message within government and who controls that. And I mean, that's why it is a really interesting battle in this present coalition, because you have two similar sized parties and who within the trio and who wins out in that battle. And if you're judging by the polling data, there's no doubt who's winning that one at the moment. And how do you play it to? I mean, Labour the last time compared to when they were in government in the 92 period onwards, when they went in 2011, deciding to be diplomatic when it came to public utterances and any disputes that were there were dealt with internally. That particular approach didn't work either. So it's difficult. It's difficult to know how you can emerge from that successful as a smaller party, because inevitably, if there are more ministers on the other side and if they do have a greater number of portfolios, they have greater control. So I think that's probably the main reason for it. But I mean, it wasn't always the case. I mean, there was one election in relatively recent times where the number of Progressive Democrats doubled from 4 to 8 in that period in 02, wasn't it? The 02 election.
I think you're showing your age if you're talking in the not too distant past.
Well, it was in 2002, but it does show a small party at that point.
Yeah.
So maybe not always.
Okay. And just to wrap up on the linguistic thing, we did have direction of travel was one definitely going into Room 101. Then you also had your one, which was abundance of caution.
Yeah, abundance of caution.
Granular. Which was worse then?
I don't like granular. No one uses detail anymore. You just can't say the detail of something. It has to be the granular detail of something. It's like you just can't look at things anymore or examine them. You have to drill down. And then worst of all, if you really have to look, you have to take a deep dive or a deep read instead of just reading.
But is this not people
and nothing can turn or change anymore. Everything now has to pivot.
But is this not that you're heading into some world of torpor where you're only allowed to use certain words? A general grey area. And here's all these exciting people coming up with these amazing expressive ways of explaining boring politics.
Well, it means the same thing though, doesn't it? It means the same thing.
And are you doubling down on this?
I am, yeah. Very good.
First time I beat him. Thank you very much for listening to Your Politics Podcast from RTE News. Joining me in studio, we did have the Social Democrats co-leader, Roisin Shortall. Thanks very much to her. In studio, we have got Micheál Lehan, RTE's political correspondent. Last podcast, we had some young guy presenting, Derek Murphy, I think was his name. And he was talking to Éowyn Reardon and got him talking about the existential question of not just his political life, but his personal life. And as he looked back over his life, you know, what was he going to be able to say to himself? So I think we have to raise the bar in our next podcast.
What did he say he was going to say to himself?
He was talking just about how he was focused on the policies and decisions that he was taking with a view to looking back at the end of his life and being able to stand over it and say, yes.
Hmm.
So, just next time out, just putting you on notice. We expect something similar.
Okay. Camus, Sartre, Nietzsche.
Maybe something Irish. Mm. Maybe something from Kerry, you know?
John Moriarty.
There you go.
The most underrated Irish philosopher, and perhaps, according to Declan Kybert, the most important writer since Joyce and Beckett.
On that note, thank you very much for listening to Europe Politics Podcast. Please do subscribe. Please do leave a comment, and we'll catch up with you next week.